when I am 64, which is well and past your use-by date, which is, that's my particular framework, that moment in time, it's Brodie Uzay here, and this is the Age Stage, and I think this is about our 19th show, I think, for the year. I can't remember exactly. Now, you may notice something, and I've certainly noticed it, because I miss her dreadfully, and that is that Vicky is away. And she's going to be away for this week and for next week. And then after that, then I'll be away. So she'll then be in the driver's seat with Brendan. So this week I have to fly solo. And that's going to be interesting because it means I've got to press all the buttons, try and hold the conversation and do lots of things all at the same time. So it might get a bit tricky. So I'm going to be looking for a lot of help from Peter and Tom. Tom's not actually here at the moment, but he's coming in a bit later on. But Peter's going to help me guide my way through. Now, the rest of the show, after that, one of our guests is Stuart Orchard, who's from the Salvation Army's Red Shield Appeal, and we'll be discussing some of the services that the Red Shield Programme provides for the community here on the Mornington Peninsula. And it's good to know that there are organisations out there who can help when you need it. Because you never know, it might be you or someone that you know that might need their support one day, and that's so very true. In our finance segment, we'll be discussing macular disease with the Macular Disease Foundation, and that's going to be with Julie, I think it's Harati, I think that's that. I think there's lots of silent letters in there. And we're going to be discussing how macular disease is a problem in particular for seniors. Now, something that's slightly out of kilter with what is normal from this time of the day is, when we do these announcements, is that we have an actual announcement that's come in from a third party and they would like us to make it. So, the Australian Multicultural Community Services is inviting the ethnic community leaders and all interested individuals to a free information session about aged care services. Now, the information will be held on Tuesday the 6th of June at 2 p.m. or Saturday the 10th of June at 2 p.m. Afternoon tea will be provided. For more information or to register your attendance, there doesn't seem to be a website, but there is a telephone number, so go and get a pencil and I'll sort of hum a few bars. Da, 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 da. Now, it's 9689-9170, and I'll repeat that at the end of today's show, 9689-9170, if you want to discuss aged care services, particularly for the ethnic community leaders. So that's something you've got to look into. Now, of course, it is the moment of truth when I play the very special piece of music, which is for the people that we all care for the most. And that is Peter and Tom, who are really the gearbox that drives the engine of this show. And I'm certainly going to need it today, Peter. How are you?
Well, I'm good, thanks, Brodie, and good morning to you.
And to you. It's been a bit of a trying week, hasn't it, with this stuff going on in England and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, we have to put the world into perspective when we're talking about the age stage, is that these things happen and they all get very difficult.
They do.
And, I
tell my children, I think I've seen the best of the world.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think our generation has been peculiarly blessed that we missed the Vietnam bit. Well, at least I did. Mm-hmm. And obviously the big wars and we are now too old for any of that in any case. So
yeah, and this relatively recent concept of, you know, killing innocent people is terrorism.
Yes.
I mean, I just feel for my grandchildren. What's the world going to look like?
Absolutely. Mm. And we often have the discussion at home, and particularly you start to think about the grandchildren's grandchildren because they're talking about there not being enough food.
Mm.
So, those are issues that address us. But the one issue that we're going to address today, and we've discussed, you and I, well, all the team, we've discussed a full broad range of issues to do with aged care during the, must be coming up for nearly a year now.
It is, yeah.
We'll have to have a party.
We will.
And we've discussed all the things that matter And now we're starting to unbundle the things which we stumbled across during that time and think, oh, we must cover that one off. And I think this is one of those, and it's a bit weird, in the sense of the role of children. There's Thomas coming in through the door. He'll be with us in a minute. The role of children and siblings and seniors combined. This is about both the siblings inside the village and outside the village. So the reason that we're raising this is that there is a scuttlebutt that's going around.
Is there?
Oh, yeah. I think there is.
Oh.
I think there is scuttlebutt that's about potential bullying with senior citizens or senior citizens that are maybe not in the village but who have had grandchildren given to them and said, you need to look after them for me for a while. Mm. And then that goes on and on and on and on. And these people are getting older and older and having children. So you don't get that insulation when you're in a village, I assume. When they come to your village, what role do children play and grandchildren in the village?
I think a village is just like any other community. From that perspective, life is the same as it is outside the village, I'm pretty confident to say. Within the village environment, clearly there are rules about children and bikes and skateboards. And the like. Yes.
Absolutely, skateboards, mate.
Yeah, because they can be pretty dangerous with older and frailer people, particularly those who have on walking frames can't get out of the way. So we don't want that sort of thing happening. But other than that, grandchildren, most welcome, encouraged.
Are they there pretty much all the time? Can you always stumble across children weekends?
And yep. Clearly at school holidays, grandchildren play a big part of the village life for their grandparents, I'm sure.
Do you do anything as a centre, like, I don't know, have grandma and daughter's play date rooms and things like that to sort of connect the seniors with their grandchildren? Do you have things like that?
So in terms of grandchildren, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the pool's phenomenal for
that. The pool? Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a go, wouldn't it?
That's always used. Grounds are pretty good. We're quite fortunate in our locations that we have shopping centres and playgrounds and schools in close proximity. So for the more active grandparents, they're out and about with the grandkids anyway, particularly in school holidays and all the weekends. You haven't got play centres or anything like that in your village, have you, Pete?
We actually did have some years ago, many years ago.
Playgrounds? Anything like that?
We had playgrounds. And they were the old traditional type of playgrounds with swings and slides and things like that, which are taboo now because you can't get insurance for them.
Yeah, it's true.
You become responsible for people falling off swings and those sort of things. So
I still reckon they're a bit like tennis courts, you know. Mm. They look good and they sound good, but nobody ever uses them. Is that a fair call?
Well, funnily enough, we've got a modern-style playground in Tea Tree, in the aged care facility, and that gets used all the time. That's for little ones. It's terrific. It's safe. And so when they come to visit, their parents come to visit, or their grandparents. So they'd be the great-grandchildren in that case. Mm-hmm. It's just near the cafe. They can sit outside on a nice sunny day, and the grandkids can play. And I think, I know that our residents love to see the kids playing.
Mm. Yes, they do.
They certainly do.
Yeah, the real seniors, you know, they get a remarkable amount of joy. I know that my mother-in-law, even with her Alzheimer's, her whole face would light up when Gil turned up.
Yep,
and he was actually very good with her. He actually understood that she was very old and that she had problems, and so he was very gentle with her. And they also like dogs, don't they?
Pets
and things.
Yep.
Do you have a village pet, like one that sort of anyone can?
Well, within the village, people have pets, but within Tea Tree, that's more problematical to have pets. So, but there are people who bring pets in all the time, dogs. It's terrific, and the dog spends a few hours within the facility. And that's, you know, fantastic. The residents love it.
Because I think there's one person I was talking to a few weeks ago, and they have a residential dog that is the petting dog. And it just wanders around, and everyone it just lives in a permanent state of chewing chocolates and being patted.
Down in Eastwood Retirement in Bairnsdale, we have a problem with ducks. So we've actually got a pet fox.
Oh, you have not.
But we have, Pete, but we've actually got two, and they're moulded, and they look like they're going to pounce. So that's solved our duck problems. But the other big one is usually a cat. You often have a cat. In a village, you know, around the kitchen and things like that, Pete, they're usually something that.
Well,
comes
on the
up.
Peninsula, the council rules are cats aren't allowed outside at all.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, so it's quite strange. There's a couple of cats within the village that get walked on a lead, which always seems funny to me, walking a cat on a lead. Yeah. It doesn't quite look right.
It would be more peculiar if it was a pig.
We've actually, in two instances, done around $15,000 renovations just to make sure that the cats are okay inside the villa.
Is that putting it in the cattery container? Yeah, that's a lot of money.
I don't know about you, Pete, but we have a policy where people not only can bring their pets, but they can actually replace. Some villages have a policy where
you can come
with your pet, but once the pet goes, you can't replace it.
Mm.
Now, we think it's an important part of people's emotional and spiritual and mental health to have a pet, and if that's the way that, you know, their disposition, then it's pretty important. So we have a pretty strong pet policy. We have lots of pets in our villages.
Well, and that's all on the light side. The dark side, or the underbelly of senior stuff, can be this business of an older person's children causing them a certain amount of grief, either wanting to borrow money or do all that sort of thing.
Yep, absolutely.
Have you ever encountered that in your?
Yeah, we've encountered a couple of instances. Probably more so in the last few years.
Mm.
Some kids have a sense of entitlement.
Yes,
and. Often if there's some wealth in the estate, the children really fear mum or dad or both moving into a retirement village environment where potentially the wealth's tied up and they don't have access to it in the same way they do outside of. So that definitely occurs. We had one awful instance where we had a gorgeous woman who had... Her health wasn't great, but she'd set her heart on coming to the village. And often having a goal like that is an important motivator for life, you know, getting up every day. This lass lived on a 45 square home on a hill overlooking the village development. And so she was watching it evolve and everything, and she'd decided which house, where she wanted to sit. And there was a situation where I think there was three kids. One lived locally and the other two were interstate. The other two were wrapped that mum was making some decisions and wanting to move and all of that. But one of the siblings really wanted to keep control of the family home and all of that, and contrived a whole circumstance where there was some assessments done, and basically the advice to this lass was you're going to be in a nursing home within 6 months, so it's a waste of time going into a retirement village. And I remember at the time when I was given the news in front of a solicitor and the family, and this woman was quite stout in delivering the news, but she just broke down in tears when we were walking out the door. And so we ended up having a 10-minute cuddle, and I just said, look, we're always here. Anyway, she didn't go into home after 6 months. And at about the 8-mark point, I get this call and says, bugger them, Tom, I'm still alive, I'm coming to the village. And she came, and she's still alive today after 7 years.
Oh, wow, that's
and
nice.
She'd be sort of in her mid-90s now. She's had a couple of accidents. We don't let her drive a car now, but she's still alive and kicking. So, yeah, so to answer your question in a sobering way, there is manipulation and pressure from family. It does happen. We witness it, I think... you probably see it as well on when people are coming in.
Yes.
And probably don't see it as much on the way out, because We're often involved in the facilitation process, you know, contacting nominees or guardians and power of attorney people and so on. So it's a wee bit more exposed or in the light, if you like, in those discussions. So the manipulation's not as strong. But certainly on the way in, yeah.
I suppose it comes back to that, as Peter, you've always said, that the fraternity, it is a village, first and foremost.
And the community.
The community.
Yep.
And therefore, it is the community that does the listening. It has its ear to the woes and fears. And I guess if somebody felt that way, you would encourage them to either go and see someone at the F, because your lasses or the people at the desk, they are the keeper of the keys, so to speak, aren't they?
Yeah, they're the window to the world.
Yes,
they certainly are. And over my 25-year journey at the Village Glen, I can think of a number of occasions where residents, I think bullying is a strong word, but we as parents all want to help our kids, no matter what.
Yes.
But sometimes the ask is a bit of beyond the pale.
Mm.
And the good thing about being in a village environment versus the general community is that the staff, generally speaking, are well respected by the residents.
Mm.
And we can have very confidential conversations. They can share with us their concerns. And we can give the benefit of our experience, having seen these circumstances before and what the outcome was. And I can recall a couple of occasions where residents had given me notice. The classic example is maybe where a daughter and with young children split from the husband, and that can be financially devastating for that family. Mm. And the residents feel they should sell up and move to the community where the daughter is to support them, because clearly they're in financial stress. Our advice has always been, you need to do that, but how about you don't sell? How about you go and rent near them and see what happens? Because we've had experiences where they have sold up, moved to a country or whatever, and then the daughter or the son has another partner, and then they move out of the town. And then all of a sudden the parents, who've given up a fair bit to support them, are on their own in a very strange environment.
Mm.
So we sort of suggest to people that by all means do the best you can, but don't make any life-changing decisions in those circumstances. Let's see how things pan out.
What would happen to their investment if they did that? Let's assume they did go for a year or two. What happens to the property that they had?
Oh, that's fine. I mean, provided they pay their monthly charge.
Right, okay.
One of the benefits of a village for the younger residents is the lock and leave syndrome, where home base is the village, but they spend a lot of time not there because in their younger years they're travelling with their caravan or whatever around Australia, you know, gone for the winter, which is happening right now at the Village Glen. I'm sure it's happening in most villages.
Mm. There's a
vast cohort of people heading up the highway with the van for the winter. Yes.
But you couldn't sublet.
No.
Right.
Well, when I say no, in our circumstance, no.
Right.
And it would be unusual. And the reason for that is that we have a contract with the residents themselves with regards to living in the village, and for them to sublet the property, we would have no control over their tenant. So there's all sorts of reasons why that wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. Could you commandeer it? You know how you have units put aside for visitors and that sort of thing that might want to have
are some villages that keep a villa or two or an apartment or two available for visitors to stay and pay rent.
Yes.
We don't do that, but I'm aware that some villages do that, and that's really a good thing to do, I think.
So potentially, I suppose you could say, well, you could Airbnb it back back to the facility, which is an idea. That's a very interesting and alternative point of view to take. Keep your asset, go rent, see how it works, and then if it eventually works, sell up and go if that's what you want to do. But if not, come back, and you've always got your base to go to. But it raises one interesting question: do you have to have, by requirement of a village, a will? Because in the event of a solo person passing on, obviously the property's got to be resolved with whatever it's got to be done. And I would assume that if they didn't have a will and it went into probate and all this, all
that we spend a good deal of time at the early stages of this, of when an inquiry becomes a sale, suggesting to people that there are a number of things they need to do. Medical and financial powers of attorney are one of them, and clear will is another.
Right.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we say to people, whilst you're doing a check of your residential needs, do a financial check of other things as well. It's a good time to look at everything you're doing in terms of your estate, your financial needs, medical powers of attorney are so important these days.
Yes.
With privacy laws, etc. So it's very important that people get their affairs in order, and the mere process of thinking about moving from the family home into the village's environment, and I'm sure most operators would deal with them, and they'd say, look, you need to take some advice on a number of issues, one of which is the property that you're buying from us, but there are other issues that really you need to have in order before you move.
Do you contract that, Pete? They changed it, didn't they? We used to actually contract that you had to have a will. I think in the latest round of regulation review, no longer, you can't enforce people to have a will.
Right. Mm.
But as Pete said, you encourage people to get all their affairs in order. Mm. But in our contracts, we want to identify, we actually have a situation where we identify a nominee or an alternate nominee, which is our go-to person. And they're often an executor of a will, and we do try and clarify that. But more importantly, we make sure that those people that are nominated to, that we can go to about the affairs, health, whatever, of our resident, that they hold the appropriate attorneys. And we contract that in our contracts.
Well, I guess that's good advice whether you're in a village or not, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
You'd be amazed how many people don't have them. We, you know, in all our retirement 101s, you know, you ask the question, how many people have got a will? You know, there's still 30% of your audience usually looks at you and says, oh, I think I've got one.
We had the conversation just last night, and that it's time for our wills to be
reviewed. Yeah,
not that everything's going to change, it's just that you need to review it.
Mm.
And it also changes a little because our youngest daughter would become, you know, part of the power of attorney ruling because she's here and one of them's gone overseas since, and they get all that stuff that you forget about, don't you?
Yeah.
It's one of the things you sort of, you maybe have a will party at the village so you can all read out your wills and see who's got the funniest will and then see whether it needs to be updated or not.
A will party. I like that. That's very enterprising. Maybe we should get Brody to come down and host it.
That'd be very funny.
A will party.
Well, didn't they at Abbott Talis?
Will and Testament party.
Abbott Talis Drive. I think it was left to the dog. The guy that passed away, he left it to his dog, and it was looked after by the manager for many years. Living in the house is bizarre. Very strange. Thank you very much, guys, for coming in and being so patient, because we haven't had the dulcet tones of Miss Vicky.
We haven't had the dulcet tones.
And she's the one that's always alert, and her radar is always up, and she can pick up those nuances from you two. It must be a men-girl thing. Well, next week we're going to be back together again, and we will have a whole range of new topics, and then I will make sure that while I'm away, which is going to be an thing that I'm not particularly looking forward to, I do have to say, but while I'm away, I'll make sure that Brendan and everyone else is fully equipped to be able to care for your needs.
Very good.
In the time that we have.
In the time that we have.
Thank you very much for coming in, guys. That's we really good. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brody.
Thanks, Brody.
Take care.
Cheers.
And welcome back to The Age Stage. Brody Guzet here. Now, for our next segment this afternoon, we have Stuart Orchard, who's with the Salvation Army. And as I said at the opening, you're never going to know when you might suddenly find yourself in a position where you actually going to need the salvos, and it'll be one of those very difficult days when you find that you may need access to what they can do for you. So to try and help us understand the way that the salvos work, so how we can help them as much as how they can help us, here is Stuart. And Stuart, welcome to The Age Stage. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Now, let's start off with the beginning. What are your donations put towards fundamentally?
Okay, fundamentally, we look at donations go to food vouchers, so people who are struggling to actually provide a meal themselves. Money is raised through, say, the Red Shield Appeal. It goes to help with people with, needing assistance with also, drugs, alcohol, gambling, financial counselling. We also have like a family tracing centre. Also, we have people helping in courts. We also provide, around about 2,000 beds to homeless each night. In a typical week,
that's
we provide 100,000 meals.
Wow. Do older citizens make up a fair constituency or a disproportionate constituency?
No, not really. I think we see it quite often. Even in some affluent areas, we see many people who present who just unfortunately, through possibly a loss of job or illness, need some, I suppose, a little bit of a leg up. And so, we try to help as many people as we can.
If I identified somebody and I thought that they might need a tap on the door, would I contact you to say, I think you should go and see Mavis at number 37?
We'd be always happy to have someone, if you believe that someone's needing assistance, we'd be grateful for people to giving, I suppose caring enough that they ask for the Salvation Army to help people. And so, we acknowledge that and thank people for the respect that they have for us.
The Salvation Army has changed a lot over the years, hasn't it? How is it different today? I think it's a much more sophisticated. You know what I mean by that? It's not intellectually any more sophisticated. It's always been very smart, but I think its relationship with society is different to what it was, say, 50 years ago.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I suppose technology changes things. We always think that the younger generation thinks technology is a good thing and helps people. I suppose that allows us to get our story out a bit more. So whether it's through the internet, through the social media that we have available, but then again also through print media. So we're able to get our story out a lot easier these days.
Mm.
It's a fine line being able to make sure that our story is clear and I suppose something that people want to hear about.
Does the Red Shield Appeal only happen once a year?
I suppose technically we would say the Red Shield Appeal is a all-year-round appeal, but the Red Shield Appeal is the main weekend is this coming weekend, the 27th and 28th.
Right.
Of May, so you'll see people out possibly on intersections. There'll be Bunnings. They could be up there in the local shopping centres, and there could well be people out collecting in the local shopping centres. This week, we have people at sports stadiums. So and hopefully we'll have a number of people knocking on people's door.
Well, I think it's a very important message that you bring, Stuart. And when they start rattling their tin, everybody out there, then don't forget the gold coin business. Go straight to a note is my recommendation to you, because they do so much good.
And you'll see it in a couple of our centres. We do actually have tap and go services this year for the first time.
That's a good idea.
So if people want to, we know that these days people don't carry as much cash as they used to. So down in some of our centres, down on the peninsula, they should have tap and go facilities.
Well, there you go. You're only saying that technology really, really is working for the salvos.
It is.
And that's terrific. Well done, you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Don't forget, everybody, if you want to help the salvos, this weekend is the Red Shield Appeal. Make sure that you dig deep, because as you never, never know, you may need them one day more than you could possibly imagine, and they'll be there to hold your hand when it's most needed. Thanks very much, Stuart.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And welcome back, everybody. My name is Brady Guzet, and you are listening to The Aid Stage. And unfortunately, we don't have, as you will have noticed, we don't have Vicky with us today. So I'm pressing all the buttons and having a bit of a drama one way and another. But I'm very glad to say that all that drama is about to pass away, because we have with us today, at calling in from Sydney, Julie Herity. Now, Julie is with an organisation that looks after macular disease, which I believe is to do with the eyes. And this is Macular Degeneration Awareness Week, I believe. Is that Julie, is that true?
That's correct, it absolutely.
Is. And welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Brody.
Now, first of all, let's put macular disease into perspective. What exactly is it?
Well, macular disease affects your central vision, and your central vision is responsible for your ability to drive, to read, to see faces clearly. And the leading cause of blindness and severe vision loss in this country is macular degeneration, and it affects older Australians. 50% of all blindness and severe vision loss is attributable to macular degeneration. So it's the big one, and that's why we're having Macular Degeneration Awareness Week, to raise awareness of this disease so we can save sight.
How would I become first aware, this is providing I haven't been to an optician, of course, what would be my first symptoms?
Well, that's a great question, because the answer to that question is you can have the very early signs without even knowing. So no symptoms, because this is a disease at the back of the eye. It has nothing to do with your glasses at the front of the eye. And perhaps to answer the question about awareness of it, I could just explain how this disease works.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be okay,
Absolutely.
Brady? Absolutely. Yeah. So let's imagine an old-fashioned camera.
Mm-hmm.
We've just got the lens at the front, and you put the film in, the old ones from years back. The front of the eye, the lens that you would turn and focus what you're looking at, that's your glasses. That's the front of the eye, and that's what glasses do. When we see things, the light shines into the back of the eye and hits this lovely light-sensitive tissue called the retina.
Mm-hmm.
And let's imagine that's the film in the old-fashioned camera.
Mm-hmm.
And right in the middle of that retina is the macula. And that's why this disease affects your central vision, because the macula is right in the centre of the retina. And in the layers of the retina, this is where the blood vessels rapidly grow and cause this disease. Now, when you ask me the question, how would I know? So you can have the very early signs without even knowing, which is called drusen, and only an optometrist or your ophthalmologist can see those very early signs. Now, there are two types of macular degeneration, dry and wet. And dry is a very slow, progressive form that can cause vision loss, right? It's a late stage that does cause vision loss. But we don't have any treatment for it. But diet and lifestyle can slow down the progression. Now, the wet form is very sudden, dramatic, and quick, for which we have very effective treatment. But this relies upon a window of opportunity, about a week, to get to an ophthalmologist and have that treatment on an ongoing basis.
Mm.
So how would I know if I could, first of all, you have that eye test. Secondly, if there were symptoms of this disease, these are the sort of things you might get. Dark patches in your central vision, blotches, an empty space appearing in the centre of your vision. Distortion, where straight lines appear wavy or bent. You know, people will say, I was on the golf course and the flagpole started to bend, or the Venetian blinds looked a bit wobbly, or I was driving. This is a very common one. And the lines in the middle of the road started to get a bit wonky. So distortion, where straight lines appear wavy or bent, distinguishing faces becomes a problem, or difficulty with reading or any other activity that requires fine vision. But I'm talking about really difficulty, like it's very blurred, it's the letters on the page are just not making sense. So any of those could be a sign of macular degeneration.
That 1 week for the wet version sounds concerning. Let's assume I haven't been to an optician for a while, and I start to get that wavy line, say on the road. Is that an indicator particularly of the wet version?
Yes.
It is, okay.
Yes. So you get that distortion.
Right.
And it could be late stage dry, because one thing we need to note is dry can also turn to wet.
Oh, right. Oh, dear.
Right. Yes, dry can turn to wet. So that can be symptomatic of the wet form. And you should treat it as a medical emergency.
Absolutely. Yes, you should. There's no doubt about that. It's and I certainly didn't realise that a time frame of that magnitude, or that's in a tiny time frame, could be devastating. Could you actually lose your sight in that 10 days? Is that possible?
You could, but that's the optimum time, right? This treatment is an injection in the eye, and many of your listeners, I know, are going to be having this injection in the eye. It's ongoing, and it is determined and tailored to, you know, what is suitable for you by the ophthalmologist. But there is a window of opportunity. Of course, those who get there later, I mean, we always hope that will be effective. But we always say, you know, get there as soon as possible, because the earlier the detection is done, the greater the chance of saving your sight. Now, in between visits to your eye care professional, if you're having treatment or if you're not having treatment and you're over 50, you should actually get what's called an AMSLA grid from the foundation. It's free, along with your free information pack. And this is just a magnetised card that you put on your fridge. It's a grid with vertical and horizontal lines and a dot in the middle. And you leave your reading glasses on and stand about reading distance, put one hand over one eye and test for any distortion, the lines appearing wonky or wobbly, or any black blotches or empty spaces. And then you do the same with the other eye. Now, this is really important, because the brain is very clever. And if there's been a bleed at the back of the eye, that's where this macular degeneration occurs, the wet form, very quickly. The brain sometimes makes up the image that you've lost. It's very clever. And we have to trick it into actually seeing what we're really seeing. And that's why we put one hand, alternatively, over each eye and test. So this is a very simple way to test for any sudden changes in your vision between visits to your eye care professional, because any changes in vision should be dealt with immediately.
Absolutely. How would I get hold of such a card?
Well, it's very easy. All you have to do is ring the foundation on 1-800-111-709, 1-800-111-709, between the hours of 9 to 5 Eastern Standard Time. And my staff will take your name and details, and we'll send you out a free information kit on macular degeneration and the AMSLA grid. Now, this is all free, and I'll be sending you one, Brody, in the mail.
Thank you very much.
Very quickly. So it's really, really important to have that kit and practice all of the eye health measures that we promote. For example, let's just go through some of these important things. So I've talked about have an eye test, make sure the macula is checked.
Mm-hmm.
Use the AMSLA grid between visits to your eye care professional. Don't smoke. Smoking causes blindness. 3 to 4 times the risk if you smoke. Okay?
Yep.
Keep a healthy lifestyle and control your weight and exercise regularly. Now, that just seems basic, but, you know, it's going to help not only your eyes, but your heart, your brain and your bones.
Mm.
And, you know, I've got to get out there and do some more walking, Brody. I'm telling everybody.
You and me both.
So,
it'd be our secret.
practice what I preach. Eat a healthy, well-balanced diet. Now, what are the eye health foods? Fish, 2 to 3 times a week, the dark oily fish.
Mm-hmm.
The oily fish. Dark green leafy vegetables. They've got the lutein in it, which is a great antioxidant for the back of the eye.
Kale, spinach, that sort of thing.
Yes, and the spinach is a lot of. Some people don't eat kale, so spinach is excellent. But if you're actually on medication like warfarin, you need to be checked with your doctor if you suddenly increasing dark green leafy vegetables. So it can have an interaction, so be careful there.
Didn't know that
either. And fresh fruit daily.
I didn't know that either about warfarin and green leaves.
Yes, so when we send you out the pack, we include a diet supplements fact sheet,
mm-hmm.
and all of this is inside the pack for people to go through and have a good read, and then if they've got more questions, they can ring and ask at the foundation. For those that have got macular degeneration, what's really important is to tell your children about it, because if you have someone in your family, direct family member with macular degeneration, you have a 50% chance of developing the disease. That's why Ida Buttress is our patron, because her father and her uncle has macular degeneration. He's just had his 100th injection in the eye and is still driving and is 98.
I hope that injection doesn't go through the pupil or anything, does it?
No, it just goes straight into the, he's 89, not 98. goes straight into the area of the retina. So
right.
It people who have it, and we talk to them all the time, yeah. say, look, it's more the fear of it,
yes.
and it's over in a second, and it's really quite good in a way. Some people have a little difficulty, but most people take the injection very well. So this is what's going to save your sight, and many, many people who have this condition certainly are using it very well.
Julie, why wouldn't I be able to get this pack from my optician?
Look, some opticians have it, others getting it in and keeping storing it, etc. Some have some information, but I guess as the peak organisation for macular disease, we have it available readily and easily for everyone. So some opticians do have it, others don't. So it can be, but we actually have a whole range of publications. So we have one called Low Vision, A Guide, Family, Friend and Carer, AIDS and Technology, Slips, Trips and Falls.
Wow.
So there's a whole range of guides to help people who have low vision or blindness.
Would I find this on a website somewhere?
Yes, and our website has all of these publications, and that's MD Foundation, which is all one word, mdfoundation.com.au. And you can order them online if you wish, or you can ring up easily and do that. So we try to make it as easy as possible for everybody, especially those that have vision loss. And I think, Brody, one of the things that in this Macular Degeneration Awareness Week is that what we did a survey, and what we found was that there's this huge group of people aged 50 to 64 who are looking after elderly parents or grandchildren. And 70% of people between 50 and 64 are undertaking those carer duties. That's 2.5 million people.
Mm.
And I'm sure many of your listeners are going to be in that group. You know, they're running to take mum or dad to the doctor, their elderly parent, or they're going to the nursing home to have a chat, or they're mowing their lawn, or they're picking grandchildren up from daycare and looking after them for a couple of days to help their son and daughter-in-law,
yep.
you know, do all what they want to do. So what we found is that a huge number of people, we asked them, is this having any adverse impact on your health? And over 50% said yes. And then we got the surprise one of that only 6% of these people say that an eye disease check is their top health happening is that there's this huge group of people who are either working, retired or semi-retired, who are doing all of this carer work lovingly and committed to it, but they're not caring for their own eye health. And if you don't care for your sight, you're not going to be able to do all those carer activities and drive and read and read your grandchild a book and drive them to daycare. So I just want to get that message out to everyone over 50 to have that eye test and never ignore any changes in your vision. But to those people who are undertaking this amazing job of caring for others around them in their family, don't forget about your own health, especially your eye health.
Couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And we've learnt an awful lot from you today. And I would certainly like to get one of those packs. You'll get. I'll have to say, get some details through to you so that I can get in. Because we should put it on the fridge actually in our studios, and so, because we do have a number of senior people here. And it should be a bit like an eye test that is just there, you know. So anyone comes and goes, oh, I'm seeing a bit fuzzy, or I'm a bit, you know, I'm a bit wobbly, and do something about it.
That's a great idea, Brody. And even for your people that are listening, your listeners,
yep,
if they want extra supplies of this material, this information pack or AMS degrees or whatever, for their Probus clubs or their Rotary clubs or their friends and family, please don't hesitate to ask, because that's what we're here for. And we can pack it up and send it out to you, and we'd be very grateful for everyone out there promoting those key messages, because somewhere today, somewhere, someone took note, and I can guarantee their sight has been saved.
Well, that's an extraordinary achievement, if that's exactly what's happened. Julie, thank you very, very much. I just want to repeat that number again, and you can make sure I've got it right. It's 1-800-111-709.
Correct.
1-800-111-709. Nearly as simple as our number, 5975-1234. Julie, that's been tremendously helpful. I opened our eyes, to use a pun, to a number of issues, and we really need to be very aware of our eyesight, because once it's gone, you really can't get it back once it has gone. And to you and the organisation, the Macular Disease Foundation?
Yes, Macular Disease Foundation Australia. We're a charity,
yep,
and we survive on donations and support
and grants from
the community.
Yep.
And one of our big areas is research. We've to date committed $3 million to research, to outstanding, brilliant Australian researchers, because what we've got to do is find the answers and the reasons for this disease, because it's costing so much in terms of, the cost to the economy, but the higher cost
is the cost social
to the individual and the family.
Yep, absolutely.
And we don't want that.
No, we certainly don't. Julie Herity, thank you very much. And we look forward to talking to you again in the not-too-distant future, perhaps.
I'd love that, Brody. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Julie Herity. And with some fantastic advice, and we should all take care of our eyes and be aware that that if we don't do these things, then they can get up and grab us. And I must admit, it terrifies me, the idea that in 7 days you could be suddenly finding yourself, without wanting to panic anybody, a losing battle. So, word to the wise, if you happen to be looking at some, what you should be, straight lines or parallel lines, and they suddenly look a bit wonky, go and see your eye specialist straight away. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. And it's been a little bit grubby in terms of trying to pull it all together, but one way and another we managed it. Next week we're going to have the boys back, and we're going to be talking about more interesting stuff to do with the villages, and we'll explore a whole range of completely new topics. Vicky, I miss you dreadfully. I wish you were here, but oh well, such is life. Till the next time, this is the A Stage. Take care.